Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Everyone to Aggressive Negotiations, a great Star Wars podcast, one that you should be listening to, and we're so glad that you are. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for subscribing, for reviewing on iTunes, for being here. Just give yourself a hand right now, please. And my name is Matthew Rushing, and I am one of the Jedi Masters here, and of course have my lovely, amazing, talented, that's right, the only one I could do this show with, John Mills, Jedi Master.
And now that's your cue for the second round of applause, wherever you are, even if you're just walking down the hallway at work, just stop and start applauding. You applauded for yourself, now applaud for us. And we're going to bring it to you this week.
It's not going to be awkward. I mean, I know you're on the train right now or something like that.
That's right.
Work, you know, it's going to be weird, but thanks so much for joining. We really appreciate it. We're so glad that you join us every week. We have a blast doing this. And I think everybody's, John, knows that I've been on the hot seat a few times on the show. And you challenged me to put you on the hot seat. And you don't know what I'm going to be putting you on the hot seat about. We threw some things back and forth together, but you have no idea what I chose.
Yes, and I'm excited for this. I am Clubber Lang, and you're Rocky. Or no, you're Clubber Lang, and I'm Rocky, or however it works out. Come on.
Well, however That's it goes, right. It's going to go like this. John, I know that Episode 3 is your favorite Star Wars film, and I think you consider it to be the best of the Star Wars films.
Yes, hands down. Best thing George Lucas ever did.
And so tonight, you are going to be defending that. And so I want to start with this base question. Why should everybody consider Episode 3 to be the best Star Wars film over the original Star Wars, over, of course, Empire Strikes Back? I mean, why should The Force Awakens, why is this the best Star Wars film?
My go-to answer is that it is the most personal work of an artist that we ever got in the Star Wars universe. That Episode 3 is, if you know anything about the life and times of George Lucas, Episode 3 is his most honest and complete work of art. I think that Episode 3 lays bare everything that he has considered a challenge and everything that he feels that he has had to apologize for, compromise on, or even regret over his life. And that is why I think that is one of the many reasons that I think that Episode 3 is the best of the entire series. And I think that it will remain unassailable for the foreseeable future because of the simple fact that it is the one epic movie that I've ever had the pleasure of watching where not only is it deep like that, but the plot moves with such a ferocious single-mindedness that it calls to mind the energy of his original Star Wars. But it's done by an artist who has had time to come back to it and truly be a complete master of his craft. There isn't a single beat in Episode 3 that I consider to be a false note or a forced note. And that's it.
So for you then, what puts this above something like, we'll just pit it against Empire, because that's the one I think, if you were to poll most Star Wars fans, like all around the world, that'd probably be the leader for them saying that's the best Star Wars movie. Why is this one better than Empire? I mean, you gave some great reasons why this is a great film, and even a Star Wars film and a George Lucas film, but how does this eclipse something like, for me, what I consider, you know, Empire to be the pinnacle?
That is a great question. A lot of what appeals to people about The Empire Strikes Back is the high drama and the dark story and the richness of the trials that Luke goes through and those sorts of things. But, and I have I've come under fire for this opinion in the past, Empire also ends on a very hopeful note. Even though Darth Vader has thrown everything he has against the rebellion, even though the Empire has come down like a hammer on our heroes, even though Luke has lost his hand and found out something troubling about his life, at the end of that movie, they're still looking out at the sunset and the music is swelling and they are saying, no, we are not defeated. If you take that and you put it on the scale of episode 3, you have a film where at the end, a whole way of life for the entire galaxy has come to an end. The bad guys have won this chapter. Our hero, the person where, you know, he fails where Luke succeeds. There's tremendous sadness. There is nothing but setback for everybody. Yoda goes into exile, for Pete's sake. The most powerful good guy that we've ever met, with the exception of Anakin, arguably, goes into exile. Obi-Wan goes off to live the life of a hermit. And the Jedi are no more, but still, they're looking out. And it shows that life eternally provides an opportunity for redemption. No matter what, you know, you may be seeing the sunset, but it will not remain dark. The sun will rise again.
You know, I think that's a great point, because I was going to say, honestly, Empire and Episode 3 have the same ending. You know, it ends with the hope of the kids making right what's gone wrong in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is a very interesting thing. And it's such a wonderful scene to end on, you know, because you end with Leia in the arms of this adopted, you know, family that's going to love her and cherish her and make her who she's going to be. You end with Luke, you know, doing the same thing almost that he does in the original Star Wars film. And he's too young to be watching the sunset yet, but his, you know, his adopted parents basically are doing that. And we, you know, we've talked a lot about on the 602 Club about actually the importance of the way that Beru and Owen raise Luke. You know, they raise him in a loving enough environment that changes his existence from what Vader knew and what Anakin knew. So yeah, I agree with you. I actually think, you know, Empire ends in a lot more hopeful note than people give it credit for. It does have a darker feeling, but that's a lot like Sith as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, so the next question is, and this is something that happens a lot for people, is they get caught up in the way in which Anakin falls in episode 3. A lot of people get tripped up by that. It really bothers them. They don't buy it for a lot of people. So I want you to defend the way in which Lucas has Anakin turn to the dark side. And why do you think it works? Why do you think this helps make it the best of the Star Wars films?
Usually I fall back at this point when somebody talks about the turn and I say, Anakin actually turned back in episode 2 when he kills all of the Tuskens in a rage about the loss of his mother. But if we look at episode 3 as a singular work, it's an operatic work. And I still say that people are pegging Anakin's turn. And this is another thing that I love about episode 3 and a lot of Lucas's work, is that he leaves the room for interpretation. There's nothing set about how you approach the text of the film. You can come back at it and you can pull it apart. And over time, even just looking at Sith as an individual work, Anakin's turn is not when he cuts off Windu's hand and lets him be killed by the Emperor. Anakin's turn is when he kills Dooku. He's actually gone to the dark side, essentially, in the first act of the film. And everything from that moment to when he, basically when he cuts off Windu's hand, is when he accepts what has happened. He's fighting the truth of his life between Dooku's death and Windu's death. Windu's death is just when he accepts what has happened to him. And his conversation with the Emperor is a brilliant conversation, but it's, again, he's responding with what he's been taught to think about the role of the Jedi and the Sith in the galaxy, and it's simply Palpatine giving that little nudge saying, are you sure you believe that? Do you really believe that? And so, yes, it chips away at the veneer of goodness about him, but he is already evil by that point.
So I want to dig into that then a little bit deeper. with what are the things that you think make Anakin turn. You know, we talked about on the show breaking Anakin, but specifically in Sith, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, he just fell for his wife and, you know, like really lame reason. But what are the really deep reasons that you see this, you know, boy we met in episode one all the way to episode three? Like, what is it that it clicks in him in this movie to make him say, I am going to make the turn? Like, I'm going to reject everything that the Jedi have told me, that Obi-Wan has told me, you know, so that when you get to that platform scene and he says, I've created this new empire, which I've created. I mean, he's made a full on like Sith turn.
Sure. I think, again, this gets to the more personal nature of the story. Lucas, when he makes the original movies, Luke Skywalker, Luke S, is a stand-in for him, okay, and his outlook on the world and those sorts of things. If you come back to the prequels, Anakin becomes the stand-in for Lucas's, you know, views of the world, and it shows a young boy in episode one who is showing great promise. And when Lucas explodes onto the scene as a filmmaker, he shows great promise and people are praising him. In episode two, he starts to feel the pressure of his own expectations of, well, if I'm so great, why isn't everything easier for me? Why is it that I have to work so hard when everybody keeps telling me I'm so great? And then when you get to episode three, you see, you know, Anakin standing in for Lucas as, I've become everything I didn't want to become, and I've become trapped by my own decisions. And I think it's very obvious in Lucas's life, the whole reason he walked away from being, you know, intimately involved in his films as a director or writing scripts and stuff like that, and sort of just becoming a producer, is because he was, you know, he realized he was trapped by his own decisions. Anakin mirrors that journey. He struggles his whole life with the idea that he's supposed to be so special, and instead life becomes hard and difficult and he doesn't know how to deal with loss. And so his natural reaction, and this is pulling from Lucas's own words, comes from the desire to control. He doesn't want life to be as random and chaotic as it is. And so he falls because he's trying to control everything instead of listening to Yoda's advice of chill out. You know, life is what it is. Just go along for the ride and do what you can. Anakin's trying to control every aspect, and that's why he falls.
So you're saying Anakin was told he is a special snowflake his whole life, and he is finally mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore because nobody's treating him as special as he's supposed to be treated.
Something's not right. I want more, and I know I shouldn't. I'm not the Jedi I should be.
So again, Lucas is seeing into the future what's going to happen with all of these kids that have been raised as little spoiled brats and told they're special. And when they realize they aren't, they throw temper tantrums and, you know, destroy society.
Well, I mean, even in a sense, because Fight Club comes out in 1999 at the same time that that episode one does. And Fight Club has a lot of the same, you know, the anger that the main character experiences, the thing that creates Tyler Durden and the Fight Club and all of these things. He says in one of his monologues, he says, we're a generation that's been told we're going to grow up to be rich and famous. We're going to be movie stars. We're going to be rock gods. And we're waking up and we're realizing it's not true. It's, of course, much more, you know, complex than this in the long run. But part of what creates the snap that makes Fight Club come into existence is these lost souls that can't figure out their place in the world because it's not the way they were told it was supposed to be. And I think that happens with Anakin as well.
One of the things that I think is most fascinating is the way in which the prequels continue to surprise me with the depth and the way they become more and more relevant as the years go on. I really, in some ways, feel like George Lucas is clairvoyant in some senses and sensing where things are going. And maybe it's just because he's a student of history and he's portraying something that's happened before, but it's also something that can happen again if we don't learn. And I think that's one of the things I really love. What are some of, for you, I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, the Anakin storyline, and that's one of the most important things that happened. But I want to ask specifically, and I've heard this knock against the film and especially against the character of Yoda. I want you to defend Yoda talking to Anakin in that scene, because a lot of people say, well, Yoda's just kind of a dick. Like, he just...
How so?
That he doesn't understand Anakin, that he doesn't give him the right advice, that he's not being... Basically, he's not coddling him enough. You know, that's what I feel.
Wow.
Like, that he's not approaching Anakin in the way that Anakin can understand and interpret and take in. So I've heard that a lot, and I kind of wanted to hear you speak on that, because this is your favorite film. And do you feel like that is an issue that Yoda has, or do you feel like he gives him the right advice and Anakin just can't hear it?
I think that it works in two ways here, where, yes, I think you're right there, that he gives the correct advice to Anakin that every single living being needs to come to terms with, which is, we're all going to die and you can't stop it. And don't bother trying, and, you know, be grateful for the time that you have. Now, in terms of treating Anakin with kid gloves, this, I think, would speak to Obi-Wan's failings more than Yoda's, because Yoda is giving advice that any Jedi should be able to understand. What is it about Anakin's training that has fallen short? Where has Obi-Wan indulged him? Where Anakin, as a full Jedi Knight, can't listen to a lesson he's already supposed to have learned and process it. Yoda isn't supposed to be dropping knowledge on him that he's never had before. Yoda, I think, is approaching this as, okay, I know you're having the visions and everything, but remember what you've been taught. You know, we're just part of the tapestry of the Force. We can't control it, and let's live our lives as best we can. And instead, I think that there's a failing in Anakin's training that makes him incapable of hearing this. And maybe that's because Obi-Wan coddled him too much, did treat him, you know, too much with kid gloves.
That I can definitely see. And I think, you know, that's something that we've talked a lot about on the show, you know, this idea of training Anakin and who should have trained Anakin. And it's pretty clear when you come to a scene like this that, you know, there is, it's not necessarily Obi-Wan's fault that he's not the best master for Anakin. He's a novice as being a teacher.
Right.
So that's not really his fault. So it, now I'll say, interestingly enough, the Obi-Wan Anakin comic book, the last issue, Obi-Wan makes it clear to Yoda that if Anakin decides to leave the order, he will leave the order as well to continue to train Anakin to keep his promise. So there's an interesting change and shift for me because of that comic book, which is canon. So, I think it's a very interesting thing that he has this relationship, but it's an out of a sense of duty and obligation to his former master, not so much necessarily just Anakin.
Okay. You know, I think this could be an interesting onion to be. I don't want to try to delve too far into it, but I definitely think we should talk about the comic series.
No, I think so too.
Of the context of my trial here, because I have my own insights as to the story that's told in there, and its weight in terms of the overall story. I'm going to do my best to stick to just the text of the film.
No, that's
here.
Okay.
I'm not discounting what you're saying. I'm saying that that's an interesting side conversation that we will have on a future episode.
No, I think that's a wise call. Just something that came to mind. And, well, I mean, I'm the interviewer, so I can say whatever I want.
Of course you can.
I wanted to ask you, too, again, we have talked a lot about, you know, in the prequels, what for you were some of the other themes that stuck out to you with episode 3 that made it more resonant to you and makes it stand out, not just, you know, the personal Lucas side or anything, but is there anything else about this film that when you watch it, it brings something out in you that none of the other films do thematically?
Yes. And people will, you know, you can take this however you want, but Anakin himself in that film is very I'll just put it this way. He's very recognizable to me. A lot in terms of his challenges with processing difficult truths about life. I don't want to get, you know, too much into it because it becomes an argument that nobody can refute. And it also sort of waters down my other arguments about it by making it seem like the only reason I like this is because of some sort of, you know, personal emotional resonance. But I will say that Anakin is a very understandable character to me in episode 3 because he wants the sadness to stop and he's angry. He is angry at life because he has endured pain and he feels those emotions very deeply and it's very difficult for him to get a handle on them. And there are a lot of moments in episode 3 where Anakin basically stops and says, I shouldn't do this. This isn't right. I know, you know, and, you know, you can take it all the way back to episode 2 where he says, I'm a Jedi. I should be better than this. Like, I can very much relate, especially to due to some of the things I went through from my mid-20s forward, that I could very easily see myself embracing Anakin's worldview and understand how difficult it is to break apart from that and not just start lashing out in anger and instead making what I would say the Luke choice. And that's what's so beautiful about episode 3 is it really does cast into stark relief that father and son are very similar, that their struggles are very similar, that they truly do. Like, the whole reason Luke's suffering brings Anakin back is it is that moment where Anakin finally realizes, wow, I did make, you know, like it throws it into stark contrast for him. The weight of the bad decision that he made, like it slaps him awake, if you will. I mean, I think that it works for that reason, but you know, and then if I were to throw one more thing on there, it would actually be the politics of it all. Because I fancy myself sort of like an armchair, you know, political history buff and watching the fall of a Republican system is a fascinating thing. And it's happened many times throughout history. And, you know, Palpatine's takeover of everything is so beautifully orchestrated that you can't help but chuckle a little bit.
Yeah, it seems very familiar in a lot of ways. Sadly,
it sure does. It sure does.
If you needed to convince somebody, or if you needed to explain in maybe just 2 sentences why episode 3 and the prequels themselves matter, because, you know, episode 3, I'd say, is probably the most accepted of the prequels. But still, I mean, people still look down on it. And you're saying it's the best. So explain to somebody why it matters, why they're important, especially in the age of The Force Awakens and you can do more than a few sentences. Do it however long you want. But just especially why it matters to have those stories, why it matters that they were told, because that's one thing you'll hear from people is, we didn't need this. So why do episodes 1, 2, and especially 3 need to be there as we move forward?
I would say to anybody that says we didn't need this, that they're suffering from the same thing that Anakin does in episode 3, which is you're hearing something you need to, but you don't want to, which is some really difficult observations about life, and in particularly loss. The prequel trilogy is all about loss because that's what makes it the redemptive arc, is it swings down and then it swings back up in the original trilogy. I think that it adds such a weight to the entire story and puts in context the fact that a single person's struggle mirrors what the world goes through. Like, there is very much a microcosmic struggle of what an individual soul can go through that is a mirror for what a society can go through. And I think that the prequels are especially important for showing, you know, to speak to something about the Force that's spoken of in all of the original 6 films is the interconnectedness of it all. that we are all a part of this one big web. And Obi-Wan even says in episode one, you're part of a symbiont circle. And what happens to one affects the other. And I think that Anakin's journey through the prequels, and especially in episode three, shows that we can learn a lot from individual human stories that can teach us a lot about what's going on in the world at the time that they're happening.
Now, put your critical hat on, John. This is your favorite of the Star Wars films, but
yes,
what would you like to have seen done differently that could have made episode three even better? Is there anything that you could have done?
It's a tough call, but the one thing that immediately jumps out to me and that I've stuck with for many times is the scene where the Emperor appoints Anakin to the Jedi Council. And it ends with, they need you, Anakin, more than they know. There is a lead up to that scene that has some important text in it that I think should be put back in that gives some more context to everything and to the machinations that Palpatine has in motion. Outside of that, I struggle to think. I think you could make an argument that the R2-D2 stuff, the zany R2-D2 stuff with the droids in the docking bay, that I could cut. I could live without that. And I would have considered taking that out in favor of putting back in something to give Grievous a little more menace, you know, up to and including killing Shaak Ti, so that, you know, the way it was originally done, they witness Grievous killing Shaak Ti, and it's done to mirror Vader. And, you know, Maul mirrors an aspect of Vader, Dooku mirrors an aspect of Vader, and Grievous mirrors an aspect of Vader. And so it would have been nice to see that sort of, you know, grim weight given to it. But that is a, you know, that's a, it might play better in my, I'm willing to admit that might play better in my head than it would on screen. So I'm not going to question that. Although I'm still not a big fan of the R2 zaniness. It's there.
What that? Ah, that nothing.
Yeah, right. And that, but yeah, I mean, the only thing I would really throw in there would be to, I would compel Lucas to put in the bit at, with Palpatine. And it's very tempting to say, put the Qui-Gon voice back in. But I originally felt that was super necessary and shouldn't have been cut out. But I actually like that it's a surprise moment between Yoda and Obi-Wan, that it's a little secret that they share. When, you know, Yoda says, training I have for you. And he's like, you know, your old master's come back. Qui-Gon, like, it's a little blip. It's a little quick thing instead of dwelling on it while Yoda's meditating.
With that critical hat on, other than R2-D2, is there anything that when you watch the film, you're like, because, you know, that happens even in our favorite films sometimes, where you're just, there's something in there that bothers you. Is there anything in this film that where you watch it? I mean, is it maybe the scene on the balcony? You're so beautiful.
Nope.
No, I'm.
I love that.
Okay.
I love that. I love that scene. I absolutely love it. Because it shows that sort of playful silliness that none of us want to admit we go through when we first fall in love. But it is one single shot, one moment from the entire movie that I would cut and never should have made it into the movie. And it's when Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighting Dooku on the Invisible Hand, and Obi-Wan cuts up the super battle droids, and it cuts to Palpatine, and he looks up and he goes, yeah, that's awful. That one shot, like every time it's coming, I'm like, oh, hold on. Yeah, okay, it's over. That is the one moment that I would cut. No, that is, I dislike that moment very much.
I have a question too. Does it ever bother you how quickly Obi-Wan is taken out in that fight, but then he can take on Anakin and, like, you know, it just bothers me.
Nope.
But, okay.
Doesn't bother me in the least. I actually had some musings about it in the past where it was Obi-Wan doesn't fight with the same ferocious imagination that Anakin does. And so Dooku, being a master swordsman, should be able to, especially after having fought him previously and handled him, Dooku should be able to, you know, kick his midichlorians.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, Obi-Wan is going to disarm, and obviously... Yeah, that makes complete sense. I like that. Is there anything else about this film when you think and you hear people talk about it? What are they missing that they're not seeing that makes this the best Star Wars film? I mean, because so much has been said over the internet or even by, I'm sure, friends that you've had or anything. What is it that you think that people miss about this film the most and most often that doesn't help them see what you're seeing?
This will sound incredibly dismissive and trite, but I think that Revenge of the Sith resonates with people more if they have had a tragic loss in their life. I think that that can help inform them, because I think a lot of people miss the fact, gloss over the fact that the place that Anakin is coming from the very start of this movie, is the tragic, needless loss of his mother. And how that can truly devastate somebody on a spiritual level, on every type of level. And I think that people need to watch this movie and remember, you know, how awful her death was, not just in an objective storytelling sense, but from a personal sense for this character, that the place he's coming from is already informed by pain he doesn't know how to process.
No, I think that's a very, very valid answer. People just tend to be dismissive of the prequels in general.
Agree.
And so a lot of people, even if they're watching it now, they've heard so much vitriol and hate on the internet about them that they go in with an eye to look towards criticism instead of, okay, what does this movie have to offer me? What's it trying to say? Right. What's it trying to do? And, you know, I think you've laid out some incredible things for people to think about with episode 3 to really kind of challenge the thought process. And I can understand why people like this one as compared to the other Star Wars films, because I do think in the end, 3 was the film that most people thought they were going to get throughout all of the prequels.
Yes. I can tell you that it's interesting you say that, because I remember going to Celebration 3. And when they showed the preview clip, you know, they showed the montage of moments without dialogue from episode 3, and Rick McCallum was on stage, he specifically said, "This is the one you all have been waiting for. This is the one you wanted." And like the crowd goes nuts and everything, but that always stuck with me, because it was this tacit admission on McCallum's part that, you know what, yeah, he's completely aware of the fact that you didn't want to see episode 1, but he wanted to make it. You didn't want to see episode 2, but he wanted to make it. Episode 3 is the one that you have been clamoring for since 1999.
Well, and you know what I think I love about that is that it shows that George doesn't make the Star Wars movies for the fans. He makes them for himself. And I think that is what made them so special. You either like them or you don't. George honestly doesn't care.
To get back to, you know, what we have both said before, Lucas was in the business of making art that just happened to be commercially successful. He wasn't trying to make, he really legitimately, and I know people will roll their eyes and they'll say, oh, but look at all of the merchandising. Lucas was lucky. The art he wanted to make spoke to people on such a level that they wanted as much of it in their lives as they could get.
No, I completely agree with you, and I think it's just, it's something that makes it special. And I can say that, you know, after having been to the sequel trilogy now with, you know, The Force Awakens, I mean, there's a movie that they're legitimately doing everything they can just to appease fans and not necessarily stretch the art form of Star Wars. I think there is definitely a different approach.
You and I may have slightly different views on The Force Awakens, but we're both very honest about the fact that there is a completely different approach for episode 7 than there was with the previous 6. Absolutely.
Well, John, you know, I really appreciate you being on this hot seat a little bit. And, you know, I think we've got something really cool to share with the listeners before we kind of get out of here. And that is that, did you know that we have a cool new partnership with Loot Crate?
Matt, thanks for bringing that up. If you haven't heard of Loot Crate, it's a monthly subscription service. It's all focused on geek and gamer and pop culture items that are tailor-made for the collectors out there. And for a monthly fee, about $20 a month, you get unique t-shirts, collectibles. You get a whole plethora of items that will tickle your collector bone, as it were. And if you would like to participate in Loot Crate and support the network, go to lootcrate.com/thenerdparty. Enter the code NERDPARTY and you will get a discount on your new subscription. So head on over there today.
That's so cool that we are doing that, John. I hope everybody will check that out. And, you know, before we get out of here too, and if anybody wants to talk about, you know, episode 3 with you or anything revolving around Star Wars, the prequels, where should they look you up there on the internet?
Oh, you can find me. I'm Kessel Junkie on pretty much every social network, but especially on Twitter. That's where you'll find me hanging out a lot, harassing Matt. On a podcast on the Trek FM network focused on Star Trek creatives called Stage 9. And I am also part of a podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my pal Craig. But we would be remiss, Matt, if we didn't tell people that they could actually interact with the show on Twitter at the Jedi Masters.
That's right.
Where you can speak to us. We do our best to leave our initials on tweets when they come directly from us, but we tend to speak much like the Jedi Council. We may have differences from time to time, but we speak with one voice generally. And they can also come and talk to us on Facebook at the network page, facebook.com/thenerdparty. So that's where they can reach out to the show online. Where can they reach you, Matt?
Well, of course, they can find me on that little thing we call Twitter at MattRushing02. They can also find me on the Trek FM network doing a show called The Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. I also do a show called Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also interview the authors, which is so much fun. In fact, the brand new Star Trek writer is a author of Star Trek books. Her name is Kirsten Beyer. We've interviewed her quite a few times on Literary Trek, so you can find that there if you're excited about anything in the Star Trek world and the new series come out. And I also do our general geek show there on the network of Trek FM called the 602 Club, and it's so much fun. We talk about all sorts of great geeky things and great geeky topics. John, you're on the show quite often, especially when we're talking Star Wars, so everybody should check that out. And, you know, they can also find us on iTunes, John, which is a great place to help out our show by giving us a review. Guys, that is the best way for a podcast to grow. So head on over to iTunes and give us a star rating and review, and we will make sure to mention you on the show. It doesn't even matter what rating you give us. We'll make sure that you get the love here on Aggressive Negotiations. Now, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.